Welcome to the Georgia Today podcast. Here, we bring you the latest reports from the GPB newsroom. On today's episode, Georgia high school students and their cell phones may soon part ways during the school day under a law that's headed to the governor's desk. ICE officers are now assisting with long security lines at ATL, and Iran becomes a dividing issue for the candidates hoping to replace Marjorie Taylor Greene in Congress.
Our country is safer because of what President Trump has done regarding Iran.
We should not put ground troops on the ground because this is not a water we should be in.
Today is Monday, March 23rd. I'm Peter Biello, and this is Georgia Today. A bill banning high school students from using cell phones during the school day is now headed to Governor Brian Kemp's desk. The state Senate today unanimously passed the legislation already approved in the House. Suwannee Republican State Senator Sean Still says it's aimed at helping students develop better communication skills.
They've forgotten and lost the ability to have interpersonal skills. And those are critical things that we all learned growing up that kids in this generation do not have.
The bill expands upon legislation passed last year that bans cell phones for students through eighth grade. It leaves up to individual school administrators how to enforce the ban, which would go into effect by July 2027. Travelers are now being advised to arrive 4 hours ahead of their flights at Hartsfield-Jackson Atlanta International Airport. Security wait times have gone offline at ATL.com, and ICE agents are now at the airport. GPB's Amanda Andrews has more on the misery at ATL.
Security lines are long as TSA officers have gone several weeks without pay due to the partial government shutdown. TSA PreCheck continues to function, but Global Entry has closed. Now, Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents are at the airport to provide additional support for TSA in Atlanta. Anaya Carter arrived 7 hours early for her flight to Nebraska. She's concerned that ICE agents haven't been trained for airport operations.
I feel like that would cause a lot of things to get through, scanners and everything else, or like potentially stuff being missed that the actual TSA officers might catch, or I don't know. I think it can get hectic.
The Department of Homeland Security has been shut down since February 14th. For GPB News, I'm Amanda Andrews.
And for more on the impact of the delays on airlines, airports, and passengers, let's turn now to Ram Chalapa, professor at Goizueta Business School at Emory University, who studies the airline industry. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Peter.
So first of all, what are you hearing about how long it's taking passengers now to pass through security checkpoints at Hartsfield-Jackson compared to how long it usually takes?
Oh, I've been hearing anything from 2 hours to more than 6-7 hours. And the two-hour delay that I'm hearing from is actually from one of my friends who's one of these elite members that has clear, that has all TSA pre and all of that stuff. So we are expecting average passengers could be anywhere from a few hours to more.
And you're saying clear, that's the one that uses biometrics that ostensibly is supposed to make it easier for you to get through the checkpoint.
That is correct. And in fact, clear implies that the passenger has paid some additional fees in order to be eligible for a shorter line.
So how might these long lines change passenger behavior?
I think these long lines are being observed in what we would call as a part of an something that is essential for an average person. Right? I mean, people travel. Yes, there is some travel that is leisure, but a lot of travel is because people have to travel. And so you can imagine the implications of these travels for these folks that could be far-reaching. And I'm just concerned at some point in time, this is going to reflect in some sort of a public outburst from, you know, maybe even one or two passengers that could end up creating situations, unwarranted situations in airports.
Public outburst, you mean people getting angry and shouting at TSA agents or whoever else is there?
Absolutely. People getting angry, people, you know, losing their mind in terms of, you know, not being able to get to wherever they have to get to, because there could be many folks with emergency requirements. And really, we shouldn't think of all travel as being by choice or, you know, for leisure. There are people who just have to travel.
So if more people are at the airport for longer periods, does that mean it's going to become a more crowded place? And if so, how would that impact the airport's operations? I'm thinking, for example, The shuttle trains might be jam-packed, so more people have to walk between terminals, or maybe the bathrooms near the gates always have really long lines. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, an airport is an entryway into the overall travel system. So which means that if you find a bottleneck at the entryway where passengers are held, all the services that the airport has been built for are going to be consumed. And this could be anything from lines at your local McDonald's or Burger King or whatever is the choice for the passenger in terms of their food and beverage requirements, to all the way to the restrooms. How quickly can they be cleaned? How, you know, what is the turnover for that? So it's going to affect every single service that we can imagine that we usually don't pay attention to because the delay is happening at the airport.
If the federal government immediately started paying TSA employees again, however they get there politically, would the wait times at the airport be cut immediately, or would there be a lag as people prepare to return to work?
I mean, there is going to be some bit of lag because the TSA agents also have to get to the airport. Thankfully, I think we have heard out of the 61,000 or so TSA employees, about only 400 have actually quit. So I'm hoping that if this is resolved as quickly as possible, the lag is minimal, but there will be a lag without doubt.
Obviously, wait times of 4 hours are hard on passengers, the TSA, and other airport staff. Do you have any tips for making things go more smoothly?
I suppose those that are doing leisure travel should probably reconsider their travel, although it will have impact on the other things that they have planned. But given the time it takes, obviously it's great to get to the airport well ahead of time so that one is not stressed. We should remember why we have TSA. We have TSA, you know, because of Homeland Security and all of that that happened after 9/11 and so on. So there's a fundamental reason why we have the security in place. And so that security cannot be taken lightly. So which means that we cannot simply expedite the process. The process is what it is. Now, if we take away resources that support this well-defined, well-understood, and required process, then clearly it is going to have an impact on the throughput of the process. As a professor of operations management, that's what we study. What is the throughput of a process once a process has been standardized? So when you remove these resources, we are certainly going to have and see implications.
The two candidates vying to replace former Georgia Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene faced off in a debate yesterday, GPB's Sarah Callis reports.
Candidates answered questions about the economy, immigration enforcement, and the war in Iran. Republican Clay Fuller says he supports the war.
Our country is safer because of what President Trump has done regarding Iran. You see that with just the news over the last couple of days.
Democrat Sean Harris called the war a forever war and said the U.S. should have never entered it.
We should not put ground troops on the ground because this is not a war that we should be in. We should be trying to pull back out of it.
Both candidates are veterans. Early voting starts on March 30th, and Election Day is April 7th. For GPB News, I'm Sarah Callis.
Firefighters this afternoon were battling a major fire at the historic Floyd County Courthouse in Rome. Live video from the scene showed the 1892 structure engulfed in flames and smoke billowing from it. Police and fire department officials were not immediately available to provide details. Georgia's Court of Appeals has overturned a trial court's ruling ordering the Fulton County Board of Commissioners to seat two conservative election activists on the county election board or face daily fines. Last year, Democrats on the board rejected two Republican Party nominees, arguing they weren't qualified for the positions. The county GOP filed suit, and a judge agreed to hold commissioners in civil contempt until they approved the nominees. On Friday, the appeals court tossed out the ruling and the contempt charges, writing that commissioners were within their rights to exercise their judgment on the nominees. The Georgia House has given final passage to a bill that would allow drivers to renew their tag every 5 years instead of every 1 or 2 years. Drivers registered in a county that requires emissions testing will still need to get those tests every year. Dallas Republican State Representative Martin Momtahan has sponsored the legislation.
We're just going to cut down on some of this government red tape. If you live in an emissions county, you're still going to have to make sure that you're turning in those emissions timely.
The bill passed unanimously in the state Senate in the last month and cleared the House overwhelmingly on Friday. It now goes to Governor Brian Kemp to be signed into law. An avid cyclist whose work helped lead the development of hundreds of miles of bike and pedestrian trails across Georgia has died. Ed McBrayer led the PATH Foundation for nearly 30 years, beginning in 1991. He died on Friday. The organization said he elevated Georgia's quality of life for generations to come. Ed McBrayer was 81 years old. Georgia will become one of the first states in the nation with legal protections for people seeking senior living communities. Governor Brian Kemp is expected to sign into law a bill that passed unanimously in the State House and Senate this month. GPB's Ellen Eldridge has more.
The Fair Business Practices Act amendment establishes transparency standards for referral agencies to assisted living communities and personal care homes. Katie Ramp is the president and CEO of the Georgia Senior Living Association. She says there are nearly 1,700 senior living communities across the state.
Everyday families across Georgia are searching for the right place for their parent or loved one to receive care. And they deserve clarity in that moment to understand who's helping them, who's guiding them, how those services are paid for, and then how their information is going to be shared.
Ramp says census data show the population of adults 65 and over will grow by more than 50% by the year 2030. For GPB News, I'm Ellen Eldridge.
Atlanta Roller Derby is under contract to purchase a permanent home for games and practices. The league currently rents space at Agnes Scott College. They previously rented in Atlanta and Mableton. Allison Knock helps run the league and goes by Ruby Chaos when competing. She says they can't share details about the new space yet, but it's exciting to take control and have stability.
I think that the fan base is going to be really, really behind what we're doing. They've followed us, so I think that, you know, they'll find us wherever we are.
The league raised more than $30,000 online and another $50,000 at a skate-a-thon in December to help purchase the venue. The Atlanta Braves will open the season without ace Spencer Strider, who is headed to the injured list with an oblique strain. Manager Walt Weiss says the team hopes Strider can return in a matter of weeks, but no firm timeline has been set. The 27-year-old missed time last season and struggled to match his dominant 2023 campaign when he led the majors in wins and strikeouts. His absence adds to a growing list of pitching injuries, with multiple starters already sidelined by surgery or season-ending setbacks. The Braves are also dealing with issues on offense, as Ha-Seong Kim is out with a hand injury and Jerickson Profar will miss the season following a performance-enhancing drug suspension. The Atlanta Braves will open the 2026 MLB season at home against the Kansas City Royals on Friday night. Spy mysteries hold an enduring appeal in books and movies. The secrecy, the unraveling of clues, and the inevitable tangle of loyalties can produce thrilling plot twists. But how many of those are set in Georgia? Atlanta writer Ace Atkins placed his story in Atlanta, and he gave it a teenage protagonist. It's called Everybody Wants to Rule the World, and he recently spoke about it with GPB's Orlando Montoya.
Why set a spy novel in 1980s Atlanta?
Well, my editor had the very same question. Why Atlanta? I lived here in the mid-80s, early to mid-80s, and I was a very interesting kid. I liked to spend my time reading spy novels. I read John le Carré and Ian Fleming and Robert Ludlum. And then when my mom would go shopping when I was 13, 14 years old, I liked to pretend that maybe they were KGB agents lurking around Perimeter Mall or Lenox Square, and maybe I saw an exchange happening down in the food court. And so I always had a very active imagination, and it always was centered around spies, and it was part of the period of growing up in the 80s.
The novel has many enjoyable characters, but none more relatable than the 14-year-old Peter, a remarkably independent boy who drives much of the story. Why was it important for Peter to figure out a lot of the mystery on his own?
Well, Peter's me, and I was that age. I was 14, 15 years old in 1985, and you always hear the old adage is write what you know. And I think for many of my books, I would write what I would learn. I would write about subjects I was interested in or places I wanted to visit and learn more about. And this was the first book that I did set in a place and time that I was intimately aware of. I lived in East Cobb County, way out in the suburbs. I had interest in watching MTV and riding BMX bikes. And so it was really the first character that I could step into the shoes I knew so well. And I also like the idea that a 14-year-old kid is running the story because, you know, he can't drive a car. He can't do the things like a regular investigator. He's having to bum rides for friends. He's having to rely on adults for information. And that puts him in a very unique spot.
The 80s was the era of latchkey children.
Right.
We were all very independent, running around on our own. And kids just figured out stuff on their own back then, perhaps to their detriment. You wrote a line, in the book to the effect of, our parents didn't care about us. Do you believe that?
Well, it wasn't the case. You have to say this very strongly. It was not my particular story. I was not a latchkey kid. My mother was very involved in everything that I was doing. But I was somewhat envious of the latchkey kids that I knew in the 80s that had the complete freedom of doing whatever they want to, with their parents working late or divorced parents that were trying to live their own lives and leaving the kids at home. And it was something that was very difficult to explain to my editor, who is considerably younger than I am, about how a kid could have so much freedom during that time. It just was something that I just said, you had to be there. I said, it was that era of the latchkey kid where you had to fend for your own. You had to grow up very quickly. You had to feed yourself. You had to get up in the morning. And I think to the age of helicopter parenting, it's a very novel time.
Another important character in the book is spy novel writer and bookstore clerk Hutch.
Yes.
Who, along with Peter and a drag queen named Jackie, mm-hmm. position themselves as sort of DIY Russian spy busters. Is there any part of you in Hutch?
No, fortunately. Hutch is really a curmudgeon. He is a bit jaded to the world. He is not just loosely based, but heavily based on Atlanta crime writer Ralph Dennis. Ralph has been, unfortunately, largely forgotten about. He wrote a series of books called the Hard Man novels back in the early to mid-70s. He was a terrific writer. He was a poet by training. He went to the University of North Carolina, and he lived in Virginia Highlands, and he would frequent the Majestic restaurant and George's Bar that's still there. In fact, the booth where he used to write is still there. He was a great writer. So Hotchner is Ralph Dennis. I wanted people to remember him.
It's a great story, but mm-hmm. there is some social commentary
sure,
in the book
yeah,
as well.
Yeah.
And I'll touch on a couple of aspects. One is the Russian observations of American life, because they're coming from Russia and they
sure.
don't know what it's like to have all these malls and shopping and consumerism.
Oh my gosh. And the you think about the excess. I did go back out of another thing that I really love doing is going back and I read the Atlanta Journal-Constitution almost day by day from the fall of 1985. And the consumerism, you know, is just right there smacked in your face in the large print every day of going to Circuit City to buy televisions or camcorders. I think the character of Vitaly Yurchenko, who is actually a real person, who is a historic character, who did actually defect to America in the fall of 1985, I think he thought it was just obscene. And I think that's one of the reasons he ended up going back to Russia. In reality, I have another reason for it in the book. I fictionalize it. But Yurchenko was on the cover of Time magazine, Newsweek magazine. He came in. He stayed in America for 3 or 4 months. He was staying in the U.S. and he was in Georgetown, went to a very Tony French restaurant, and he was with a CIA handler. And he went to the bathroom and they didn't notice. He walked out the back door, walked back to the Soviet embassy, and I guess what you'd call it, redefected. And I think part of it was the American excess. I think he had a hard time wrapping his head around it.
What do you think is one of the most unbelievable moments of your book?
Something that's true, that you're talking about unbelievable, that's hard to just wrap your head around?
Yes. Like, I'll give you one example.
Sure.
I find it unbelievable how many people had near misses and escaped.
Yes.
I mean,
that is the stock and trade of the spy novel, or it would be a very short book.
These people should have ended up in a ditch with a gun behind their back.
I think part of one of the other reasons was exciting to write about 1985 is the, you know, without cell phones, without tracking units on cars, without Google searches, you know, this would have been, you know, if you had those things, it'd be a much shorter book. But the near capture and evasion, I think, is the core of the tension of the spy novel. As you get close to the danger or get into danger, and then you escape from danger. And of course, instead of doing this in the cafes of Vienna or off the Eiffel Tower or deep in the Soviet Union, I just decided to take those events and put them on the MARTA, downtown and put them in the shopping malls. And there was back in the 80s, there was a kids nightclub that I used to go to. And I thought, instead of doing something that was in Dubai, let's do it at a nightclub on Roswell Avenue. It's all the same. It's all the same.
I have to say, that is the moment in the book where I burst out laughing out loud to myself, because These places existed.
They're all right. They're
the kids are smoking. They're getting high. They're doing incredible things in a legal place of business.
Of course.
That their parents actually send them to.
Well, and I went back and I checked the clips and just to try to verify my memory of these times. But there were a few of these places, and they were somebody thought it was a really great idea to start a teens only nightclub in Atlanta. What could go wrong? And so your parents would drop you off at these places, and it was just like a real nightclub. It looked like the lit dance floor, like Saturday Night Fever, and they had the flashing lights, and you had the DJ. But it just they didn't have alcohol. You know, allegedly, they did have alcohol that was smuggled in. But that's the 80s. That's the fun.
That book was featured on a recent episode of Narrative Edge, GPB's podcast and YouTube series about books with Georgia connections. Find Narrative Edge on your podcast app of choice and on YouTube. And that is it for this edition of Georgia Today. If you want to learn more about any of these stories, visit gpb.org/news. And remember to subscribe to this podcast because we'll be back with you tomorrow afternoon. If you've got feedback, we'd love to hear it. Email us. The address is georgiatoday@gpb.org. I'm Peter Biello. Thanks again for listening. We will see you tomorrow.